The Virtual Record Treasury of Ireland is an All-Ireland and international research partnership working to reconstruct the Public Record Office of Ireland, a magnificent archive destroyed in 1922 at the outset of the Civil War. And the research programme, it's funded by the Government of Ireland under Project Ireland 2040 through the Department of Culture, Communications and Sport. And Dr. Ciarán Wallace is the programme director. And Dr. Ciarán is with me here. And you are listening to Irish Radio Canada. Ciarán, Gurumila Margaret, thanks a million for coming along and for a chat.
The Paul Johnson, glad to be here.
This project, just straight off, is fascinating. To try to reconstruct what was destroyed in itself is phenomenal, but also then that the amount of archival data that you guys have available is also phenomenal because it's stretching back hundreds of years.
Yes, absolutely. It sometimes we're struck ourselves on the team as to how much we're accumulating. When the whole project began, just that your listeners may not be aware, so Ireland had a super national archive, like it was like a Public Record Office of Ireland, which they gathered in, this under British rule, they gathered in records from all around the country into a modern purpose-built archival building, which is inside the Four Courts complex in Dublin. So if anybody's been to Dublin City Centre on the riverfront there, you've got the Four Courts, and there was a state-of-the-art, fireproof, ironically, building that was built there, all the records are gathered in to keep them safe instead of being held in local provincial archives, all held safe. And then, as bad luck would have us, the first battle of the opening battle of the Civil War broke out all around the Four Courts complex. The complex of the courts and the record office was completely destroyed, destroying seven centuries of Irish records in one afternoon. So a huge, huge chasm in Irish history, if you like. And I can remember even as a young fellow going into a library to try and do some research on my home place, and the librarian saying to me, oh, you can't go back any further than 1922 because all the records were destroyed. And that was my first time to even hear of this. And then many years later, I found myself on this project, which is, we began to try and do something for the centenary in 2022. And then we were finding so much, we continued on going beyond that. What we're doing is we're tracking down copies that were made of the documents in the record office before 1922. And these copies have been scattered all around the world. And originally we thought, well, you know, if we found a few hundred, put them together onto a nice website, that would be a nice thing to show for 100 years later. But when we began our work, we began to find more and more copies, like hundreds and then thousands and tens of thousands. We currently, as of the 30th of June just gone, so 4 years in operation, we have just crossed the 500,000 mark of 500,000 records, replacing records that were burnt in 1922. There's still many, many more out there. And there's many other records for which we may never find a replacement because, if you like, we don't know what copies were made. So no one kept a central list of all the copies. So we would go to archives in Ireland, North and South, in Britain, in North America, in Australia, some in continental Europe. And you'll find somebody may have been doing historical research in the 1890s and they came to Dublin and spent a whole year in Dublin writing down longhand copies. There might have been records made for a court case or a disputed will. There could have been people working on land disputes, land ownership disputes, and they would make extensive, usually handwritten copies. Sometimes they're informal copies, just like, say, you or I might do if you went into an archive and you write down a copy. Sometimes they're actual officially certified copies, and that was for use in a court. So the way they worked in the courts in the old days was, before photocopies and digitization back in the early 20th century, if you were disputing, let's say, a will or a land ownership, the court would say, show me the record to prove that you own the land, but the record office couldn't release the record you couldn't take the record outside its building. So they had officially designated copyists who would write a full copy. They would sign it and stamp it to say, this is an absolute verbatim copy, and that copy had the same effect in law as the original. And of course, the whole industry of courts going on all around Ireland for centuries, using these copies. When the originals get burned, the copies then survive. So we'd have records from like 1890s, 1900 sort of thing, going right back to, we have some records back to 1172. So it really is a full gamut that we have.
Amazing. And those records, as you say, are land ownership, all sorts of things. So as with everybody, I did the thing everybody does. I went in to search and I put in my name.
Yes.
And up popped something back in the 1600s down in Wexford. And that leads me to say, now where do I go from here?
So this is the important question. When we began this as a more sort of historical academic pursuit, if you like, but it quickly grew into something more, exactly what you're talking about, family history and local history. The amount of stuff we're finding about localities is enormous. But for the family history, we realized quite quickly that people were finding, well, we would come across lists, copy lists of, I don't know, it might be people involved in a land dispute estate, and it names 32 families in a particular part of a certain county in 1833, something like that. And you think, all those census, so just to point out, a lot of census records from the 19th century were all destroyed, so we're operating in a vacuum, so any names we find are really important. And then let alone going back to your saying, go back to the 1600s. So what we've done on the website is, we're finding records which were never meant to be used for family history. So they were used for court cases, lists of sheriffs, lists of fines issued by a court, and anything that we think has a substantial list of names in it, we bring it all together into the population portal. So you might be looking for a surname, and if you go onto the website, so it's virtualtreasury.ie is the website. It's free to use, open to the public worldwide. So virtualtreasury.ie, and if you just scroll down the homepage, you'll see portals, and there's three portals. One is for population, and any record we find that has a lot of names in it, not just one individual name, but where we think there's a substantial body of names, we'll put them into that section. So you can, in that one section, you can throw in a surname into the portal, and it'll just search all those collections. But it's important to point out, unlike I do the commercial ones myself, commercial, ancestry and by my past and all those kind of ones, and they are built around extracting the surnames and giving them to you in a very digestible way. We're not. We're based on archival principles where everything has to be held in its archival structure, which is a kind of a hard thing to describe. So the user, you and I, has to do a bit more footwork, unfortunately. You have to do a bit more digging. So you might find a name, but then think, well, what can I do with this name? So if you go back to, say, 1600s and you find Comerton in Wexford, and it could be that it's a document which is in Latin referring to Monsieur de Comerton or something like this. So think, well, what can I do with this? So then it might be, if you're not finding anything else on the virtual treasury, that's at least placing the surname and maybe a surname and a forename on a date in a place. So then you think, right, is there other stuff I can use through other resources, whether they be, irishgenealogy.ie, the other free website, or whether it's through Wexford County Local Studies in the County Library, which is wonderful. All the counties have brilliant local studies places. Or through one of the commercial sites, which you now have a new fact, a new pairing of facts, well, triple facts. You have a date, a place, and a name, and that allows you to jump further backwards. But more commonly, what's likely to happen is people are going to find, I think, names in the 19th century and the late 18th century. So my colleague, Dr. Brian Gurran, has done amazing work in finding censuses that were burnt. The census was a private document, and you weren't really meant to copy it, but people had official reasons to copy the census for a couple of reasons. One was, when you're claiming your old age pension, in the early days of the old age pension, you had to prove you were 70 years of age or more in 1909 when the pension came in, which meant you had to prove your date of birth, but there was no birth registration in Ireland in the 1850s, which was the date you would have been to be born 70 years of age. So you had to write to the census, to the record office, and say, can you find me in my mother and father's census record as a toddler or an infant or a baby? So they had, for about 3 years, they were doing nothing but supporting pension applications. The whole archive just froze and were doing nothing but pension applications. So all of those copies that were sent out to the public, most of them were surviving somewhere out in attic somewhere, or the paperwork that was used to generate the request from the members of the public into the record office, that survived. So the original census for the whole area is burnt. But if somebody from that area said, I was born there in 1851, can you find me? That one name may survive in a copy document. So, and then other copies were made of census records where local historians somehow were allowed in, or maybe more prominent historians were allowed in to have a look at the census, which nowadays would never be allowed. But so Brian is finding it is still only a fraction of the original total, but I think we have over 100,000 names from the 19th century that are found, and we've got, if you go into the portal, you can rummage around and find some of those, and anything he's found, he's transcribed, so some of these are on quite scrappy bits of paper. He's done amazing detective work, and then deciphered what they look like and written them into the website. And then the earliest census of Ireland was the 1766 religious census, and it was deliberately to count all the Catholics and Protestants in Ireland, and it was well known, well copied, largely destroyed in 1922, but there's bits of copies that are known in Belfast and in Cork and in Foynes and all sorts of places that are Ferns. So Brian has brought every scrap he can find back together onto the virtual treasury, and I think, you know, he's got over 50,000 names from 1766. So some of your listeners, if they're descended from people who went in the early 19th century, they may find a surname combination with a place in maybe, what's that, like two generations earlier, generation and a half earlier, 1760s, maybe two generations earlier. But it might give you a link back to a point in Ireland that could give you a start anyway. It's all about finding those clues that allow you to pull the thread then.
A few things there from what you said. First of all, the digitization process itself, given the amount of data that is there and that is continuing to come in. And I know on the original 1901-1911 census, Canada and Ireland collaborated in pulling that a lot together.
Yes,
Archives
yes.
Canada did a lot of work there together. But that whole process as well, digitization, obviously it must have improved to such an extent that the optical character readers are superior to what they were even 20 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. So three parts to that answer, if you like. One is, if we have, so supposing we got a volume of records from the National Library of Ireland, say it's 600 pages of handwriting, we just couldn't afford, nobody, no organization could afford to have a human sit down and transcribe that longhand into modern, or retype it out into modern digital print. So at the time we were starting our work, there was an EU-funded project in Innsbruck University, which was developing a thing called Transcribus, which is a machine for reading handwriting. So it's different from optical character recognition. OCR is reading print, but to read handwriting is a whole different technical challenge, because there's obviously as many different handwritings as there are people. But on an average, you can say somebody writing in German in 1850 is going to write these kind of letter shapes, and the machine is learning thousands of letter shapes and is able to do a best guess. Not perfect, but about 80% accurate, which is good enough to find a person name or a place name. So we put the majority of our records through this Transcribus program, and then we have some which are using OCR. So we have some print books in the virtual treasury as well. They'd be print books which are relevant to Irish history and relevant to finding names and places. And then the third type is where we have very specialist, usually Latin documents written on parchment. These are very earliest ones written on parchment. Amazingly, parchment survives better than paper. It's the oldest, but it's the most robust medium. Excuse me. And we would have experts who can read it and read the Latin and translate it and transcribe it. So they're human produced by experts. Between those three categories, handwritten text recognition, optical character recognition, and human experts, we have now got 340 million words of handwritten searchable text, Irish historical text, available for search on the website. So the scale of the data is vast, which points to a point that we're historians, but from the very beginning we were working with computer scientists, because computer scientists are necessary to handle all of this data, and also then to mine it for the better answers and questions and things, because I can never read 350 million words, nor can anybody, but the machine can help you through it. And it's not the answer to everything, but it certainly is a better tool for plumbing that field.
And that sounds a lot like artificial intelligence.
Well, there's the thing. So it is really interesting. The computer scientists that we work with, I mean, they're very excited about AI, and it is a very exciting thing. But we have seen, there's nothing on our website. There's no transcription on our website or content which is produced by AI, quite deliberately by policy. So the handwritten, the machine that reads the letter forms produces words, and we put those words up on the, but there's no, you could, you know, whatever, take tons of text from our thing and drop it into AI, but that's your own business. But we don't offer any AI-produced results to the public, because we've seen some remarkable hallucinations from it in trial. Like, we did stuff trials in kind of a fenced-off area on a different computer, and very plausible things where it just comes up with a fact, inverted commas. And you think, but sure, I put in 100 facts and I came out with 102 facts. How has it got 100? How has it got two facts that weren't there? But it's quite logically, but inaccurately, hypothesized, or as we say, hallucinated a pair of facts. And if you put those back into the system, well, then somebody goes off and says, I found that my granny was a you know, a high wire artiste in the circus, and she wasn't. You know? So, but the AI, there are things it can do. So we spend a lot of time looking for the, what we would call it, the ethical or the responsible use of AI. But at the moment, we're boxing really shy of it. We're being very cautious about what we would do with it. Nothing yet is on the public side with AI.
You mentioned that your sources, in a lot of cases, could come from anywhere.
Yes.
So how are you getting the word out there? Like, within your own community, I would say, like, yes, within the research community, I know it can travel like wildfire. But some of the richest documentation you might find are in somebody's attic. So how do you make sure they don't send it out to skip?
Well, yes, you're right. We try and do it in a very measured way. And sometimes, so we would have, initially we had team members who were actually employed to work in, since the Public Record Office in Belfast, or to work in the National Archives in Kew in London, and we've lots working in Dublin, and they would go into archives as sort of professional researchers with an eye to looking for copies and looking for extensive numbers of copies. But then we started going out and talking to local history groups and local groups in county libraries and stuff. And at every public talk, anybody will know this, you go to any public talk about history, you tell the people in the audience a set of facts, and at the end of the show, they'll then tell you 10 more facts, and you go away knowing more than you went in, which is brilliant, and I love it. But from those roadshows, we call those roadshows, we brought them to various county libraries around the country, we would have got tips to interesting, maybe in small nuggets, or sometimes to fascinating bits of information. Like in one talk we gave very early on, but 3 years ago now, it was to a Kilkenny-based group, and someone afterwards came up and said, I think I know a woman who has a copy of the census from 1851 of land rent in Ishtig in County Kilkenny. And we said, well, you couldn't possibly, because that was only created once and it was burned. But we're very polite and you listen. And then, of course, you realise, it turned out that this woman was a descendant of the land agent for the landlord. And when the state officials were gathering the census, the landlord said, my good man, I'll have a copy of that for my rent roll. He used it as his rent collecting. So they had the census, went to Dublin, and he got someone to make a copy before it left the locality. And his copy, which had never been produced in the first place, was handed down through and was literally, as you say, in her attic. Now, we don't want the physical thing at all, so we then put that lady in touch with her county archive and library. They did all the right things, and it was all done properly. And when they digitized it, we said, we'd love with your permission, and that lady was very kindly willing to do it. They were put on the website then and transcribed so that it's now searchable. It's both physically in Kilkenny and digitally on the virtual record treasury. But sometimes people come to us and they'll say, I have a single will in my attic. And we'd love to be able to take it, but in fact, it's just too much. We have to be very careful at how we have to, we're a small team, we have to measure our resources and go after specific things step by step.
You raise an interesting point there, because as a virtual record treasury, you highlight there the importance of where you would refer somebody to their local county. Yes. So as what I'm hearing very strongly is that you say, yeah, you have a small team. So you're working very strongly to collaborate with the other resources that are available to you all around the country and around the world.
Well, completely. That's key to what we do. So we get in contact with a library or an archive or whatever, we'll say something, we're not in competition with, we're not looking for you to do loads of digitization, we're not a mass digitization. Back in the 80s and 90s, people wanted to digitize the entire library, and that might have been fine for various reasons. But I think a lot of librarians and archivists felt a bit burnt by that. They gave away all the family silver, and maybe it's gone behind a paywall, or maybe it's gone off into the cloud. Or maybe people thought, well, if I digitize these books, I don't have to care about the physical books anymore because they're now digital, so that's fine. Of course, the digital rots away as well, but you have to care about the book because the book is the original. Would the book be a handwritten book or a printed book? So we are very careful to respect the disciplines of archives and librarians that we're working with. But we would always collaborate with them. So we will have a conversation with them. We'll find out, have they got, for instance, they always will have a backlog of things that they can't get to digitizing, but we can help them point out and say, that's an important record that we think that would be very popular if you digitize that. And we're free to the public. So we point, like, every record on the virtual treasury, it tells you where it came from, what library, what archive owned it, it gives you the reference number. If you want to go and see it in Kilkenny or in wherever, you go straight back to it. And that's all done in discussion with the local archivist. So we really value the physical thing, and we want to direct people, go to your local archive, go to your local library, go and see the physical thing as well if you can.
And as you said earlier, and this is global, it's not just within the 26 counties, 32 counties are the British Isles, because the Irish of their nature have been travelling since St. Brendan and earlier.
Completely. And so what we're trying to do is work on records which are kind of government and state type produced records. So if there was a book of devotional prayers or a book of literary poetry or something like that, that would be for another library, another archive. But if it's kind of like official state type correspondence, even that washes up in all sorts of places the Irish have travelled. So as it happens, one of the areas we need to go talking to next actually is Canada. So Canada's very much on our list. We have to do it in a very, I mean, Canada's huge and Ireland's small and our team is smaller. So we have to be very targeted how we do it. We've spoken with Canadian local history and genealogy groups already, telling them what we already have. But I just know, because the Irish and Canada are so long connected, I just know that if we went into Canadian universities, if we went into Canadian municipal archives and state archives, we will then start to find collections that were left behind for somebody who donated their papers on their death to the library or archive, and it will have, whether it's a census record or whether it's copies of, sometimes the records sound quite boring, copies of tax collected in 1750 in the Port of Galway. But what tax records can tell you about how a place operated in society is amazing. If you have the right eyes on them, they can tell you, like even medieval tax records were turning up, and they're telling us fascinating things about women in society and women owning property and disputing property in court under their own name. All those sorts of things come up by on the face of it, what looked like quite nerdy kind of records.
Kieran, we're going to wrap up, but we're going to give all the coordinates. And I know yes. I'll probably be talking with your colleague when yes. we get into more genealogy stuff. But this has been fascinating, and it is the Virtual Record Treasury of Ireland, which is virtualtreasury.ie.
That's it. Just log in and then go over to on the homepage, the right-hand side, you'll see the menu button for help, and the help page, there's a downloadable prompt guide for how to get started on it. But have a go, muddle in, dive in and see what you can find.
Dr. Kieran Wallace, Gramila Milamaga, it's been fascinating. Thank you so much for taking the time.
It's all Jocelyn Slum.